Fox Sports 1340 AM presents to you WMER, Wrestling Marks of Excellence Radio, starring The Firm, J-Lo, Nephew, Corey, and Dr. D, bringing you the latest up-to-date information on professional wrestling and sports entertainment. Now, live from the Fox Sports 1340 studios in Hopewell, Virginia.
Hey, welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another edition of the Wrestling Marks of Excellence here on Fox Sports Radio 96.9 FM at 1340 AM. As always, I'm your host, Glenn Thomas. With me is the Wizard himself, Nephew Corey. Wizard, what is going on, brother? What is going on?
Hey, what's going on, man?
Nothing much, man. A lot going on in the world of professional wrestling. We got stars talking about their court cases. We got wrestlers getting bit by a dog. And we have titles staying where they're supposed to stay at. So let's get the show started with a recap of Monday Night Raw as well as WWE SmackDown Live. This week on Monday Night Raw, one of the main events, one of the type big things coming from that we finally saw Bayley snap on Sasha Banks. It's been a long time coming. I wanted to see the build up. The build up to this is good. And she snapped. She snapped on Sasha Banks, beating her down. And it is one of those things that everybody wanted to see. We may not get John Cena ever turning heel, but we'll definitely get Bayley, I think, in this case, turning heel on Sasha Banks. She gave her a proverbial beatdown outside the ring, was talking trash to her as well. At the end of this, we see that Kurt Angle's trying to keep them together, and he's sending them to counseling. I'm not a big fan of the counseling segment, but I understand. I hope this match goes into Extreme Rules. I like to see what kind of stipulation they'll put on this match. This one right here with their relationship, I think it should go a little bit further. This one could be a lose-or-leave Raw match, which I thought would be great anyway. We haven't had none of those in a long time, but I think that would be a good match for them to have, lose-or-leave Raw at Extreme Rules. But your thoughts on Sasha and Bayley actually splitting up or actually fighting each other, Bayley actually snapping?
Well, yeah, they have some kind of build-up for them having a match at Extreme Rules more than likely. And more than likely, they'll have the Extreme Rules match for the women. So, it was a long time coming. I mean, if they're going to really progress this into anything and give them any kind of a real spotlight, this program, they got to go ahead and let her snap. And I think she was the right one to do it with. So, something fresh for Bayley, I like it.
I like it, too. And, you know, and this is what I really want to talk about. You know, it goes back to NXT. You know, they had a long feud at NXT. If we go back to NXT Brooklyn. We go back to NXT Brooklyn, where Bayley and Sasha Banks, I believe it was 2 out of 3 falls, if I'm not mistaken, in NXT Brooklyn, where Bayley actually won.
It was a one fall match, but it was Bayley and Sasha. Bayley finally wins the championship.
Yeah, Bayley finally wins the championship. You know, and that culminates their feud that they had, and we haven't really seen that on the main roster. So, you know, WWE at times want to keep NXT and WWE in the main rosters are separated. I think this is good for the fans. I think the fans actually get to see Bayley and Sasha go at it here. We also had the Intercontinental Championship match between Dolph Ziggler and Seth Rollins. Dolph Ziggler still retains the IC title. I think this is a good move by WWE to keep Dolph Ziggler on top. Right now, let Seth Rollins continue to chase Dolph Ziggler for the IC title and makes the IC title relevant. And makes it great. Well, one of the biggest things coming from Monday Night Raw, but it really wasn't Monday Night Raw, but it was prior to Monday Night Raw, was a proverbial, I don't want to use the word pipe bomb, but a message, a manifesto from Paul Heyman talking about Brock Lesnar and how there is no challenger on the WWE roster right now that can make Brock Lesnar fight. He talked about Braun Strowman and was getting his hands. He talked about Roman Reigns having his opportunity. He talked about Bobby Lashley trying to be like Brock Lesnar, even from the point of Bobby Lashley wrestling in the NAIA and not the NCAA, and therefore he'd been dodging Brock Lesnar all his career. What are your thoughts about Paul Heyman? I don't know about you, and I go to all our listeners out there. When I read this, I can hear Paul Heyman saying it. I'm sorry, I just had the Paul Heyman voice in my head as I was reading this. You know. So your thoughts on Paul Heyman and how WWE is using social media to continue to make the WWE title relevant and to keep Brock Lesnar out there?
At the end of the day, I've had these arguments with some close friends about this who they don't like Brock at all. I'm one of the few, it's so funny, no pun intended, I'm one of the few advocates for Brock Lesnar. I like the guy. I like the way he's being booked. I like the fact that the champion just isn't seen, and it's only seen. It just, to me, it makes it feel special when he is seen. And that's just me. Call me old school, call me cynical, call me not a real wrestling fan or whatever. Doesn't matter. I like the way he's being booked. I like that we don't see him. I like how the, you know, the use of Paul Heyman with him has done so well. I mean, basically, Brock's character is to just make the fans even more upset than what they already are. And he has legitimate heat because fans really hate him. That's the end goal anyway. He wants to be hated. He's now he's hated. I mean, you almost said he can't control the way he's being booked, but I guess technically he can with the with the contract that he has. But all in all, I mean, as a heel, your job's to get heat. No matter how you get it, he's getting it. So mission accomplished.
Mission accomplished. It makes it and I mean, I believe it makes the title relevant when you do things on social media. It still talks about the title. They still mentioned it on Monday Night Raw. They still talked about Brock Lesnar being the longest reigning Universal Champion ever. Paul Heyman still got his stick in. I think it's okay right now because you're developing other talents and other stars without Brock Lesnar. Does it diminish the title? No. It just makes it when whoever wins this thing off of Brock Lesnar, they are an instant star. So whoever that guy is, these guys, Bobby Lashley's of the world, your Seth Rollins of the world, your Dolph Ziggler's, your Samoa Joe's on SmackDown, but your Braun Strowman's, your Elias's, you want to show the WWE that you are the guy that can take it off of Brock Lesnar, and you have a rocket pack already strapped to you, and you are to the moon. Whoever defeats Brock Lesnar for the Universal Championship, it is you are the god right now. In the WWE, they're taking you to another level. And we talk about the brass ring. Everybody talk about brass ring. You should be one of you, be the one to grab the brass ring off of Brock Lesnar's finger and take this title. Get to the point where Vince has no other choice or Triple H has no other choice to put you to be the one in the title picture, whether it's Roman Reigns, whether it's Braun Strowman, whether it's Seth Rollins, whether it's Finn Balor. You want to be that guy, and that's where the competition comes out. We hear Jim Ross talk about it all the time. In the Attitude Era, there was nothing but competition. That what made it so great. So where's the competition at now that be the person to take it off of Brock Lesnar? Whether you shoot on Brock Lesnar in your promos, whether you shoot on Brock Lesnar, you're definitely going to shoot on him in the ring. Whatever case may be, you want to be the guy to take the title away from Brock Lesnar. It's like Brock Lesnar title run is almost like the Undertaker streak.
Mm-hmm.
And
I hear that.
You want to be the guy to stop Brock Lesnar's title run. So, you know, and then we saw SmackDown this week. Biggest thing for SmackDown, you got a reunion of sorts. Team Hell No reunited. Daniel Bryan and Kane come together to take on the Bludgeon Brothers. Well, Kane comes to save Daniel Bryan after he had a one-on-one match with Luke Harper. Luke Harper and Kane comes back out and save Daniel Bryan. And now they have a match at Extreme Rules for the SmackDown title, tag team titles. Thoughts on this real quick. Is this a one-off? You know, is this just a one-off with Kane and Daniel Bryan? Or is this something that could be established for a long time with Daniel Bryan and Kane? We know Kane is in Glenn Jacobs is in a run for mayor. He won the primary, so he has another part to win, be mayor in Tennessee. Will this be a long run with Daniel Bryan and Kane?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, honestly, right now, the way I see it is that there's always going to be a relationship with them. Kane might be on his last hurrah anyway. Daniel Bryan, I mean, at this point, he's not in anybody's title picture. I mean, you got to have something to do with him because you didn't bring him back for nothing. And I think this is entertaining. Bludgeon Brothers get something fresh. Bludgeon Brothers get something that could, whether win or lose, something that could put them over. So I'm absolutely in agreement with this. The team is, it's, you know what? What's crazy, they haven't been a team in 5 years. So it's pretty much, you know, it's pretty much been long enough removed that it's kind of a nostalgic act now. So I'm here for it. I'm good. I like it.
Yeah, and you know, one thing about that, though, you know, they ain't been a team in 5 years, but also with the departure of Cass, I think we talked about that last week, with Big Cass and Kamala stories coming out now about a altercation between him and Carmella backstage, him pulling her arm. whatever the case may be, it was one of the reasons he got fired. Shout out to Stone Cold Steve Austin listening to his podcast this week. People could get with him on Twitter. We're talking about, oh, he got fired because of backstage heat, and Austin said it. It's much more than backstage heat that gets you fired. if you win against Vince McMahon, if you win against the company, your backstage heat usually don't get you fired. So it's not about you walking on eggshells. And granted to him, he comes out right, and he was right. It was much more than backstage heat that they got Big Cass fired. But nonetheless, Daniel Bryan didn't have a place to go after Big Cass, so I think this is a great move for them. The Bludgeon Brothers didn't really have a team, tag team, that would kind of challenge them. They had been through everything else. Sanity's not ready yet because they interfered with the Usos. So I think this is a good move to give to make the SmackDown title, tag team title picture relevant. To have Daniel Bryan in it because he is a main eventer. Kane is a main eventer, even though some people say he's on the downward slope. But nonetheless, he is a main eventer on WWE television. I think this is good for SmackDown. We also see next week we'll get your boy James Ellsworth taking on Asuka in a match. Don't know what WWE is doing here in the gender match. I don't think the match is actually going to happen. Nonetheless, James Ellsworth taking on Asuka.
Where's the bar?
Yeah, where's the bar? It's World Cup time, and the bar is worth watching World Cup right now. Okay. I mean, they ought to break watching the World Cup. Put it that way. Nah, they do need to be on TV. Cesaro and Sheamus do need to be on TV, but the bar's not there. I guess they're taking the World Cup break like everybody else. But we're going to take a commercial break. As I take a commercial break, when we come back, we're going to talk about 1997. Me and you had a discussion earlier about, you know, the Attitude Era and what year we thought was the best year for the Attitude Era, 1997. So we're going to dig into the WWE 1997 Attitude Era. This year, I love this year. The year I graduated high school and then was moving on to college. So it was great year. But we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, myself and the Wizards are going to talk about 1997 Monday Night Raw. Well, Monday 1997 WWE Attitude Era. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back after this commercial break.
Looking for winning sports picks and predictions? Since 1971, Dot Sports has been recognized as one of the most trusted names in the sports handicapping industry. For the listeners of this very show, Dot Sports is giving out $60 worth of their premium member picks for free. These are the exact same premium member picks that 1,000 of their current members pay for. And guess what? You get them for free. Just text the word radio to the number 29022. Text radio to the number 29022 for instant access. Doc Sports also provides free picks on every single game. You want NBA picks? Simply Google search Doc's NBA picks. NHL picks? Google search Doc's NHL picks. Need MLB picks? Google search Doc's MLB picks. Remember to text the word radio to the number 29022 and start winning today with Doc Sports Service.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Wrestling Marks of Excellence here on Fox Sports Radio, 96.9 FM and 1340 AM. Once again, I'm your host, Glenn Thomas. Always with me is the Wizard himself. Wizard, 1997. As I mentioned before, we went to commercial break. A senior in high school, big wrestling fan. I was on the high school wrestling team, and wrestling was what I wanted to do on Monday nights. I loved Monday Night Wrestling. We had the Attitude Era. We had Monday Night Raw. Raw had some big name stars. You had some great commentary. This is in 97. You still have Vince McMahon on the mic at this point.
Yeah.
At this point in 1997, Vince McMahon was still part of the commentating team. We started in January. It was a 3-man commentating team. It was Vince McMahon, Jim Ross, and Jerry Lawler that was doing the commentating here. You had Shawn Michaels, who was your WWF champion at the time, because it was still at this time in 1997, it was still WWF. So, 97 was a great year, in my opinion, for the world of professional wrestling. In 97, I believe you was what, middle school?
Yep, eighth grade.
So this shows our age from there, from where we were at in 1997. But Raw was the thing. Wrestling at this time was getting to the peak. It was at a peak where people wanted to see it, wanted to love it, and it was starting to get that buzz for the WWE. So your thoughts on 1997, the beginning of 97. We're going to start in January. We'll try to work our way through the year, what was great for 1997. Also this year in 1997, WWF, and if I go back and forth, I apologize, WWF had 13 pay-per-views this year. Had 13 pay-per-views in 1997. The one that was really true to my heart was In Your House, the May 11th pay-per-view. It was the one first pay-per-view that I paid for, and it came to Richmond Coliseum. But when we get to that, we'll talk about it. But nonetheless, it was on Mother's Day in 1997. But your thoughts, your impression of 1997 WWE when we start in January?
At this point, well, I guess I'll give a little background to it while we're talking about it. At this point in 97, Sid's the champion going into 1997. Psycho Sid's the world champion. He just came off of a match in December with Bret Hart that ended with some controversy, with kind of a distraction from Shawn Michaels, in which it seems like they're planting the seeds for a Shawn Michaels Bret Hart match, and not at Survivor Series that year. It looks like they're trying to plan it a little bit earlier, probably WrestleMania. But at this point, Sid's still the world champion, so you've kind of got to work some things around. This leads you to Shawn Michaels becoming the number one contender, and we're going into the Royal Rumble in January at this point, which is from Shawn Michaels' hometown of San Antonio, Texas. And you know, they're at the Alamo Dome. And this was a big deal because this was one of the few times WWE ran a stadium or, you know, of that type of attendance that wasn't a WrestleMania. So you didn't get that too often. So for you to get a Royal Rumble, you know, like that, kind of a big deal. So you're going into that Royal Rumble in a lot of people, G-Lo, they regard that Royal Rumble as one of the best ones ever, the 1997 one, just by the talent alone and the actual event.
Yeah, that Royal Rumble and Alamo Dome, if you don't know, that Royal Rumble was in January 19th, 1997. The winner of that Royal Rumble actually was Stone Cold Steve Austin. Austin won the Royal Rumble that year in 1997. Which was a big deal for him. Not only that, because there's some of the guys I remember being in that Rumble, if I'm not mistaken, the last couple guys, I think Vader, who just passed away, was one of the last guys in there. The Undertaker was one of the last guys. And I believe the finish was that Bret Hart was in the ring. And you're the wizard, so you kept me if I'm wrong. But Bret Hart was in the ring. He thought he won the Rumble. Austin had came back in and threw Bret Hart over the rope. And Austin actually won the Rumble. He was the winner because he was never eliminated from the Royal Rumble. And he got the win in 1997.
You're absolutely correct. And there's other pieces you have to insert in there because that'll lead us into February. But when Austin was eliminated by Bret and the refs didn't see it, when Austin came back in, not only did he eliminate Bret Hart illegally, he also eliminated The Undertaker and Vader illegally. So, at this point, you're exactly right. Austin wins the Rumble. Austin wins the Rumble, and he is technically right now the number one contender and going to WrestleMania. You go to that main event, Shawn Michaels wins the WWF Championship back in his hometown from Psycho Sid. And presumably, you know, looking back on it, it looks like this is what's setting us up for Shawn Michaels versus Bret Hart at WrestleMania. And it looks like you were going to get a fatal four-way to determine the number one contender to go to WrestleMania to fight Shawn Michaels. Which, if you look at, which we are now into the February pay-per-view, Final Four in your house.
But before we even go there, you know, we got to talk about that Royal Rumble 97.
Let's talk about it.
Real quick, it was key because you had a lot of Hispanic luchadors on that. And this was WWE's or WWF's attempt to try to combat what WCW was doing with their cruiserweight division. So they brought in a lot of your luchadors to come in and fight. You had your some of your lower name Hispanic luchadors that came in into this in this feud. It came into the WWE at this time. And WWE, your Hector Garzas, your Pierre Aguayas, a lot of your, I'm not want to say no name lucha stars, but you know what I mean when I get here. Your people that wasn't Rey Mysterio, people that wasn't La Parka, people that wasn't your Chavo Guerrero Juniors, WWE was bringing them in, trying to combat what WCW was doing with your Lucha Libre, with the Lucha Libre stars. So that was something that was interesting to me during this 97 pay-per-view. But also, you know, we had Ahmed Johnson that was there, because Ahmed Johnson was running high still at the time in the WWE. You know.
Okay, can I comment on that? He was.
Go ahead.
But I think that was a product of the storyline more so than him. And that's not his fault. But that injury couldn't have come at the worst time for him back in the fall of 96, because mm-hmm. he was riding high as Intercontinental Champion. And dare I say, I'm sorry, maybe it's me, I don't know, Ahmed Johnson might have been the first black WWF champion. I might ride that to the end. He might have been the first one, to be honest.
I think he was there. I really think he was Ahmed Johnson, and people don't want to give him much credit for it because they want to say he was, you know, injury prone or he was unsafe in the ring for other wrestlers. But Ahmed Johnson had a look that people liked. He had a look that was good. He brought the intensity in the ring. Every you look at his moves, they might have been stiff, but they was brought with intensity. And you know, besides those shorts that he wore in the video, everything about Ahmed Johnson said manly man. You know what I'm saying? Ahmed Johnson was definitely somebody that you didn't want to mess with. But, you know, he got into the feud with The Nation and Farouk and all those. But Ahmed Johnson was definitely a top-tier level star at this time in 1997. And going into the beginning of the year, Ahmed Johnson was at the list. He was the pinnacle. Even though Goldust was the Intercontinental Champion at the time. Hunter was the – matter of fact, Triple H was the WWE Intercontinental Champion at the time.
At this point, January of 97 – I think he was. I'm sorry. You're right. He was.
Yeah.
He defended it against Goldust at that Royal Rumble. Yeah, he did.
At that Royal Rumble. And you know,
right?
So you had Ahmed there, and you know, and when we say Hunter, and he was still rocking the Hunter Hearst Helmsley gimmick. This was way before. This was before DX and all this. He was still rocking the Hunter Hearst Helmsley gimmick and name. So Ahmed Johnson was in that picture. Ahmed Johnson could have been in a title picture if Ahmed Johnson wouldn't have got hurt. Ahmed Johnson would play the games back, not play the games, but not get so caught up in politics and just do what he needed to do. Ahmed Johnson could have been the WWE champion, first African American WWE champion.
Going into the time frame.
So I think that was one of the big things. And, you know, this paper, this Royal Rumble, you know, featured a lot of Hall of Famers. If we look at it, it's a lot of Hall of Famers. And then also we think about it, it's a lot of Hall of Famers in this Royal Rumble. You know, and that's shout out. Before we go any further, you know, I'm going to go ahead and repost our interview that we did with Vader, just because it's sensitive and time consuming. So you want to listen to our interview that we conducted with Big Van Vader, Leon White, a couple of years ago. We're going to repost that this week, put it on social media.
Yeah.
Go ahead and take a listen. It's a very good listen. Check it out whenever you get a chance to. But it is a very, very good listen there. You know, watching this Rumble again, getting ready for the show, and looking at what's going on. Yo, Vader and Paul Bearer are both gone. And when I watched the match between Vader and the other day, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, man, both of these people are not even – they're not here anymore. So you look at that match, and that's one of the few times actually, you know, Vader defeated Undertaker at this Royal Rumble, at Royal Rumble 97. And we talk about world champions, this time Leon Vader was on his way. Could potentially been, you know what I'm saying, a WWF world champion at this point.
Can I interject on that one?
Yeah.
Can I interject on that one? He, unfortunately, at that point, he was already about 4 to 6 months removed from him being world champion. If they were going to do it, they probably would have done it somewhere between SummerSlam and that Survivor Series the year before. That's honestly where I think he, the potential was still there in early 97, but I just feel like looking back at it and looking at how everything developed, I think his time had passed by then. He had a very short window, and that time had passed by then.
I think time was still there. I mean, they opened up Raw. We mentioned Raw 97. Raw 97 with promo Vader. They had Vader taking on Vader taking on Bret Hart was that match, that main event match from Raw January 6, 1997 was Vader taking on defeating Bret Hart in that match. So when I look at that January, like, you could still see that if they wanted to pull the trigger on Vader, they could. We mentioned Psycho Sid was the champion. So we knew that Vader and Sid had history. Vader and Sid had history going back to WCW where they were tag team partners. You know, so you had a built-in storyline there if you wanted to bring Vader over against Psycho Sid. So that's why when I look at it, I'm like, yo, Vader still had an opportunity at this time to become the WWF champion.
Fair enough. Okay. Fair enough.
So he had the time there. Wait, we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back off a break, we're going to go into February. February 1997, after the Royal Rumble. What was the aftermath of the Royal Rumble? What was the aftermath of Shawn Michaels defeating Psycho Sid? Where did the WWE go from here? And we know we still had that Rocky Maivia kid around. Didn't have The Rock.
Yeah.
We still had Rocky Maivia around. So when we come back, we're going to talk about February 1997. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Wrestling Marks of Excellence here on 96.9 FM and 1340 AM Fox Sports Radio.
Jerry's Burger Spot has all your Friday night tailgating favorites. From their never-frozen burger, fresh-cut fries, ice cream, and milkshakes, Jerry's Burger Spot offers the best lunch, and if you desire a fresh handmade burger or some delicious ice cream like Mom used to make, stop by Jerry's Burger Spot at 3815 Jefferson Park Road, Prince George, Virginia, right off 36 near Fort Lee. Jerry's Burger Spot. Remember when.
All right, I'll let you open up with this one. Open up with February,
okay, cool.
And I'll follow your lead.
All right, cool.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Wrestling Marks of Excellence here on Fox Sports Radio 96.9 FM and 1340 AM. Once again, we're talking about 1997 here, the year that I was in high school, the Wizard was in middle school, the year that we loved professional wrestling, and wrestling was big in both our households. So, Wizard, now we're into February of 1997. What were you thinking here after Shawn Michaels defeat Psycho Sid at the Royal Rumble? We're going into a new month. Where is the WWE at right now from a fan perspective?
Yeah, well, looking back at it, you know, judging from a fan's perspective, at this point, you kind of saw, one, you saw they were going to do something with Stone Cold. You didn't know when, but you knew for him to win the Royal Rumble and even be in that spot, you knew they had plans for him eventually. You could tell it wasn't immediate, though, just because of the way he won. But going back to that, I'll recap that. He gets eliminated by Bret Hart in the Rumble. He comes back and illegally eliminates three other people, which is Undertaker, Vader, and Bret Hart, to win the Royal Rumble, air quotes, and Shawn Michaels wins the WWF title back. At this point, you know, they go ahead and do the February pay-per-view Final Four, in which they're going to do a Fatal Four Way, but initially you would think that Fatal Four Way was supposed to be for the number one contender for Shawn Michaels to go to WrestleMania. But other things happen. Shawn Michaels apparently has maybe a knee injury or something, and he has to vacate the WWF Championship. There are other instances where it's booked as he lost his smile, he needs to regroup or anything. Bottom line is Shawn Michaels ends up relinquishing the WWF Championship And that fatal four-way match now turns into the winner going to WrestleMania because it's for the WWF Championship now. Before we touch on that, another integral thing happens in February and at that pay-per-view, and that's the debut of China. Triple H is wrapping up his feud with Goldust or in the middle of, wrapping it up because it really wraps up at WrestleMania. But we see the debut of China as a fan in the crowd, and she picks up Marlena from behind and ragdolls her, just unmercifully. And it's to the point that, the ref stops, security's thinking it's a fan. And this woman is huge. Like, and considering Marlena was, Terry Reynolds is like 5 feet, maybe 5'1", something like that. She's all of 100 pounds at that. She looks like a child in China's arms. So that's also a big point in 1997. We get the debut of China, who was aligning herself with Hunter Hearst Helmsley. And we get back to the Fatal 4-Way for the WWF Championship. And looking back at it now, Gilo, and I'll get your opinion on this, it pretty much kind of reaffirms what I was thinking as far as the original WrestleMania main event, which was supposed to be Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart, because Bret Hart ends up winning the WWF Championship in the match. So I think the match plan goes the exact same of what it was supposed to be, but it ends up being for the WWF Championship.
Yeah, before you go there, I remember before I went to commercial break, we talked about Rocky Maivia, right?
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah, absolutely.
And I brought that point up because going into this February pay per view in your house, Maivia did something on Monday Night Raw he beat Hunter Hearst Helmsley for the Intercontinental Championship.
Yep, sure did.
He defeated it, so he won sure it. So Rocky Maivia, The Rock, for those who don't know, AKA Dwayne Johnson, AKA summer movie blockbuster, AKA $7 Entertainment, whatever you want to call him. He wins his Intercontinental Championship from Hunter Hearst Helmsley on that Monday Night Raw. I believe it's February 13th of that Monday night, February 13th. He wins on the Intercontinental Championship. So they have a Hunter Hearst Helmsley, not Triple H here, is revoking his rematch clause. There we go. Rematch clause into this match. And so, therefore, the story you told about Goldust and Marlena happens after the match. With the Rocky Maivia taking on Hunter Hearst Helmsley, where we see China. And I must say it, and you hear where we go through this, look at all the Hall of Famers that was involved in this match here. And you got Rock, who's a surefire Hall of Famer whenever he wants to go in. Hunter is a surefire Hall of Famer. China is definitely a Hall of Famer. Goldust is definitely a Hall of Famer. I hope they put Marlena in with Goldust. To me, I like to see those two going together because she really helped the Goldust. She really helped the Goldust gimmick get over.
Yeah, but
people may not want to talk about it.
She won't get in. She won't get in because of the longevity of the character without her. Granted, as much of as big of an influence she had on the character, she was only with the character for a little over a year, about a year and a half. She was with Goldust, the character. And Goldust, the character, has now been around for 23 years.
23 years.
Yeah, as important as she was, she's not a staple in it. So.
And as you say that, and I think about it, and a lot of the fans will probably correct me, and that's one of the reasons Virgil didn't get in with $1 Million Man.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And we all know Virgil's not going to get in on his own. That's not gonna happen. If he didn't get in with the $1 Million Man, then Marlena won't get in with Goldust.
Right.
I stand corrected. That's why you're the wizard.
Yep, it's okay, man. We were talking about 1997. It's all good. So
it's all good.
Back to the Fatal 4-Way after you cleared up the issue with Rocky Maivia. So We're in the fatal four way. Like I said, Bret Hart wins it, but it kind of confirms my suspicions to me that had everything gone according to what I think was the plan, at least, and Shawn Michaels retains the WWF Championship, we're lining up for Bret Hart versus Shawn Michaels two or back-to-back WrestleMania. That's what it looks like we're headed.
And see, so go back to my point that I made before the break again. The Fatal 4-Way has Bret Hart, Stone Cold Steve Austin, Vader, again, and The Undertaker. Mm-hmm. He's in this title. He's in this title picture again. You know, well, for whatever reason, you know, he was, and I, you know, I'm not partial. Now. I mean, I know he's a friend of mine, whatever. But he was that monster in WCW. He was the monster in New Japan. He was the monster wherever he went to. Why not here for this time in February? I know it's leading to your Mania. He could have dropped it before then, or whatever case, put the title on Vader. Because you knew you wouldn't get in Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels. So we already knew that you wouldn't get in Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart for WrestleMania.
I guess you can say that.
Why not? Why not Vader? Why not Undertaker? We know Stone Cold was rolling into that point. He was getting there. He wasn't quite there yet. You know, I guess Bret was the safest bet.
No, I think what it is, I think Bret and Shawn was supposed to ultimately be what WrestleMania 13 was for. I think it was supposed to be Bret and Shawn. I think what it was that at this point, Shawn's gone. You need another main event. You aren't going to do Bret. You aren't going to do Bret and Stone Cold for the championship because the payoff of Austin is not going to come if he's losing the championship match. It's not going to come. So at this point, the main match you've got now for WrestleMania 13, in my opinion, you've got to finally cap off, or at least what we thought at that time, you've got to finally cap off Bret versus Stone Cold. And at this point, you have nothing for Undertaker, in which Undertaker's probably the safe bet to go into a championship match. Because now you have Sid, who's due a rematch, who never gets one because Shawn's hurt. So they try to tie in as much logic as possible.
Right. They tied it, but we got to go into this because we going into the match, people are sitting here like, don't know 13. Bret Hart didn't go into as 13 as champion. Why? Because he lost it the next night on Raw.
Yeah,
He lost it on Raw due to Stone Cold Steve Austin, which sets up WrestleMania 13 while we had that match. The feud between Austin and Bret Hart goes because of Austin causing Bret Hart the title, which, as I go back, it would have made a great story because you knew Sid was going to get the title back anyway. And I know Vince prior to this time, and we still do see it today, WCW didn't exist, but Vader and Sid would have been okay. They had storyline there. It was built in storyline. But we got Taker and Sid. And I guess it's WrestleMania, the Undertaker. You see what I'm saying? I guess we would have never got the streak. We would have had Taker with another match. And you just said it. Who would Taker would have fought at WrestleMania if they would have gave Vader Sid?
You know what? At that point, I honestly don't know who you could have put Taker in there with. Maybe you still would have done Sid, just not for the title. It seems like all of these matches that happened at WrestleMania 13, which we could probably go ahead and get into now, it seems like all of them ended up happening the way they were supposed to, I guess, with the exception of Bret and Stone Cold, because I think Bret and Stone Cold would have eventually just happened on Raw. And it would have ended with Bret winning, and that would have been it. No double turn, no anything. It just would have been Bret Hart winning and going on to WrestleMania to fight Shawn Michaels. That's where I honestly think it was going. We probably still would have got Undertaker and Sid. We probably still would have gotten, you know, well, who knows what else we would have gotten from that. But Undertaker said Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, do you have Stone Cold compete for the Intercontinental Championship at this point? Because Stone Cold's building momentum. So you would have had to have had him somewhere. Go ahead.
You have to have him somewhere on the card. You know, you would have to have him on there. Just, you know, you had in 13, you had the big Chicago crowd. This is the Rosemont Horizon. Right. Was the venue there at 13. You know, we had everybody remember 13. You remember the Stone Cold Steve Austin passing out with the blood at 13. You know what I'm saying? That's what you remember at WrestleMania 13. You know, we had what? That's where we got Shamrock was the special guest referee for that match there. So you had all that going on and building up here at this. So you had a lot of things going on in this match, and once again, you had some major superstars that was here. You know, you threw Owen, and we beat Vader. You threw Owen Hart and the British Bulldog in a match versus Mankind versus Vader, which was both Paul Bearer guys. So this card right here was kind of much a stat. And I'm sitting here now. When I'm sitting here and I looked at the little bit of pay per view today, I'm sitting here like, man, what was the difference? And people may slap me here. Brodus Clay was nothing but Flash Plump. Just years later.
I guess so. Yes, you could say that.
I'm sitting there watching and doing research for the show, and I'm sitting here looking like, yo, Flash Funk did the same thing. Brodus Clay did the same thing Flash Funk did. Brodus Clay, black man with hat dancing, Flash Funk with the fur coat, two girls dancing. I'm like, yo.
Right.
The funk.
I hear you.
I'm sitting here like, yo, I never really thought about it until I'm researching the show. They just rehashed the Flash Funk gimmick. And gave it to Brodus Clay.
Yeah, I guess you could say that. No, you're right. You're right. It still didn't work for either one.
It didn't work for either one of them. I just picked it up. It didn't work for either one of them. But Flash Funk, we know, Too Cold Scorpio, I love him. You know, he came from ECW and ECW. He was one of the first ECW originals, if you think about it, to come over to WCW. I mean, coming up to WWF. One of the first guys to leave ECW to come to the WWF at that time, and they give him the Flash Funk gimmick.
Mm-hmm.
Hardcore. But I really had fun researching. Look, I love the WWE Network. Researching for shows like this brings back so many memories.
Sure does.
Brings back so many memories. Like, You really see what things are new, and no one ever. I don't think anybody ever thought of it. If you thought about that on the internet, please hit me up at GFather725. If you thought Flash Funk and the Brodus Clay gimmick was the same, if you ever thought about it, please hit me up or at GFather725 and tell me that you had that same thought when you saw WrestleMania 13.
Yeah, that's you're right.
There was no streak yet. You know, there was no streak here. Undertaker defeated Sid to become the WWF World Heavyweight Champion. You know, this was big because it was the Undertaker who won the title. Undertaker was in the main event. You know, we just had come off the Bret Hart in the Stone Cold Steve Austin match, which was a great match. They gave us, you know, a match in between that. I was a big Legion of Doom fan. I didn't like the Legion of Doom, I'm gonna call it the Legion of Doom in WWE. I didn't like the Road Warriors in WWE.
Really?
I liked the Road Warriors that were WCW Road Warriors, the Road Warriors that were NWA Road Warriors, the Road Warriors that came to WWE. In my opinion, got watered down. Hawk and Animal wasn't Hawk and Animal in WWE. In 1997, I know they brought Ahmed Johnson, this six-man match, but my goodness, the Road Warriors will be dominating some of these teams that they face in the WWE at this time. I heard you when I say that, you're like, oh, really? So, as a middle school kid, were you really satisfied with the Legion of Doom?
At this point, they were still, to me, they were still the Legion of Doom that was there in 91. I mean, looking back at it now, obviously they were not. But at that time, they were still the Road Warriors to me, and they were still, you know, they were still pretty cool. And at that point, it had only been 6 years removed, so it's whatever. I mean, at that point, I was good. I was good with them. I was good.
Yeah, you was good with them. Okay, make sure you was good with them. So as a middle school kid watching Bret Hart, Stone Cold Steve Austin, seeing the match that they had, not now knowing what that match meant for Stone Cold Steve Austin, what was your thoughts? As they, like, yo, was this the best thing you ever seen, or what were you thinking?
At that point, I was questioning why they were making Bret Hart a bad guy, because I picked that up immediately. Bret Hart was turned into a bad guy. They were turning Stone Cold into a good guy. I picked that up immediately. Like, the double turn worked. You could see society was in a different place, and I always say that every time we talk about the Attitude Era. Society is in a different place then than it is now. So with that being said, I also thought at that point, I said, they're turning Bret Hart into a bad guy. I wonder if he'll get back with Owen. I remember that as a kid. I was wondering, would he ever get back with Owen Hart? Because they were turning him into a bad guy. So there we have it. As we talk more about 97, we'll get into that.
Yeah, we definitely get into that. Undertaker gets, like I said, I'm sitting here thinking, like, yo, this dude really passed out in blood. Now at this time, even though I'm in high school, I'm still thinking, you know, this stuff's real. I knew there was a little bit of a trickery to it. I knew maybe there was some predetermination, but I knew blood was blood regardless of how you saw it. You know what I'm saying? I knew blood was what it was, and I knew following UFC in the early days of UFC, I knew Ken Shamrock was a bad man.
Yeah.
Was a bad shut your mouth. And we do a whole different show on Ken Shamrock, because Ken Shamrock, to me, is a little bit ahead of his time. I love to see Ken Shamrock.
That was a big deal, getting Ken Shamrock. And I think people still don't realize that now, but that was such a big deal to get Ken Shamrock.
Oh, yeah, and it was such a big deal to get Ken Shamrock, that big Shamrock in that match, refereeing, being a special guest of that match. We could say that Ken Shamrock was one of the baddest men in the world. I know we use that term loosely. You know, Mike Tyson, baddest man in the world. Ronda Rousey, the baddest woman in the world. But Ken Shamrock at that time, legitimately, he was the baddest man on the planet right now. He was the best. You didn't want to mess with Ken Shamrock in 1997.
No, you did not.
He would break your arm. He was up there with your Dan Severins. He was up there with some other guys. That Ken Shamrock was legit. You know, he was legit. So it made a big deal. It made a big splash here for WWE to have a mega star like Ken Shamrock as your special guest referee, because UFC was coming into its own in 97. It was getting that traction. It was getting that steam. People were buying the pay-per-views. Everybody was watching Fight Club and doing different things. This right here was getting that traction, and Ken Shamrock was one of the baddest men in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. At that point, you didn't know too, I mean, you probably had to be at my age at that time. I didn't know too much about the UFC, but if you were in your late teens, early 20s, at that time, you absolutely knew what the UFC was going on. You knew Ken Shamrock was that dude coming into WWF. It gave WWF a sense of legitimacy to the casual fan. I really think so, because at that point, it was like, yo, that dude really fights for real, and he's coming to WWF. So it was a good move by them.
It was definitely a good move by them at this time. And it took, and you know, one thing we failed to mention, and many people listening to us may know, this match really took Stone Cold Steve Austin to another level.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. He was taken in that match further than I think WWF thought he would be going.
He was really, really taken to another level. And we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to talk about April of 97. April of 97, that year, and what it meant to the WWE. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Wrestling Marks of Excellence here on Fox Sports Radio 1340 and 96.9 FM. We'll be right back after this commercial break.
Looking for winning sports picks and predictions? Since 1971, Dot Sports has been recognized as one of the most trusted names in the sports handicapping industry. For the listeners of this very show, Dot Sports is giving out $60 worth of their premium member picks for free. These are the exact same premium member picks that 1,000 of their current members pay for. And guess what? You get them for free. Just text the word radio to the number 29022. Text radio to the number 29022 for instant access. Doc Sports also provides free picks on every single game. You want NBA picks? Simply Google search Doc's NBA picks. NHL picks? Google search Doc's NHL picks. Need MLB picks? Google search Doc's MLB picks. Remember to text the word radio to the number 29022 and start winning today with Doc Sports Service.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Wrestling Marks of Excellence here on Fox Sports Radio 96.9 and 1340 AM. As we are the Wrestling Marks of Excellence, myself and the Wizard Nephew Corey, we're talking about 1997, the year that we really loved in professional wrestling, the year that we really enjoyed professional wrestling. We wanted to start of the Attitude Era. Right now, we're in the month of April of 1997, we're just coming off of WrestleMania, where The Undertaker defeated Psycho Sid to win the WWF Heavyweight Championship, where Stone Cold Steve Austin passed out against Bret Hart, where we saw Ken Shamrock as the special guest referee, and Ken Shamrock was one of the baddest men in the world. So now, Wizard, we're into the month of April after WrestleMania 13. What did you see here going into this month of April after WrestleMania?
At this point, with the double turn with Austin and Bret, you knew that was continuing. Before then, when they announced the submission match, looking back, and people that, you know, really follow wrestling, your cage matches, your I quits, your submissions, your last man standings, these are all, you know, finality matches. These are storyline ending matches. Like, this was it. These were blow-offs. These were your blow-off matches. Your storyline came to an end with these type of matches. What's crazy is that really this was only a part of the beginning with Austin and the Hart, which leads into the Hart family, as we'll talk about right here before we wrap it up. Bret and Austin, you saw at this point with the double turn, with the way it ended, you knew it was going to continue.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, you knew it was going to continue because the way that it ended, you know, Austin didn't tap, first of all. He passed out. So you knew the way he was going, the way he was using his mic skills, he wasn't going to let that die. He wasn't going to let that go by him just passing out, and we saw this. And now, if those who are listening, young guys who are listening, it was a day and age where there was a lot more words you could say on television than now. It wasn't a PG product. Austin would let you have it after the 9 o'clock hour, you know what I'm saying, of WWE television. At the 9 o'clock, you knew anything and everything could happen back then. This is the day and age where they start putting ratings on the TV screen. So you had to, you could do certain things up to 8 o'clock, but after the 9 o'clock hour, it was like the gloves were off.
Yeah.
So WWE TV could get a little bit raunchier, per se. You know, also with what this pay-per-view was good that you had, we call them pre-shows now, but back then you had the free-for-all. You know, it was like a before pay-per-view match. You know what I'm saying? We had those type matches. So this is the prelude to this. So you having, you know, Austin is riding high right now, starting to get that Stone Cold the defy authority. I do what I want to do. Ball is rolling. It's getting ready to. The gas is in the car. The keys are in the ignition, and it's getting ready to start up. And it's getting ready to roll all over the Hart Foundation. And this is where he's at right now with Bret Hart. I think Bret Hart at this time was loving it because the Hart Foundation we mentioned, he started, when you said by Owen Hart, you started to see Bret and Owen starting to get together a little bit. You started to see the Hart Foundation starting to take form.
Well, this is how they played it. If we have to touch on one small thing from WrestleMania 13, because this is how they started to play it. And actually, before then, you had Owen Hart playing his character so excellently as he did. Being annoying, being kind of a spotlight stealer from Bulldog, who at the time, him and Bulldog were tag team champions, and then Bulldog defeats Owen to become the first European champion. That's something else we want to make sure we don't leave out. There's an introduction to a new title as well in the WWF, which is the European Championship. So you have them have a bit of confrontations going through the next couple of weeks of Monday Night Raw, which leads to them, you know, coming to blows. And the night after WrestleMania, Bret Hart pretty much completes the heel turn and runs down America. And then he takes out Shawn Michaels and does the figure four around the post and, you know, further injures HBK. Fast forward a couple of weeks, we have Bulldog and Owen fighting, and they're pretty much coming to blows. And you have Bret Hart come out and make, you know, breaking up, and then starts to get really emotional with those two, you know, saying, you know, they doesn't want to see Bret and the Bulldog together, their family and all that. And then he talks about how, and this was, I thought, so well done, talks to Owen about how, you know, the fans, the American fans split them. He never wanted to fight him. He misses his brother. And then Owen just pretty much breaks down crying because he misses Bret. And they all hug in the ring. And it was so well done. Because pretty much Bret aligning himself with those two, pretty much it stamped that he's a full-fledged heel now.
Yeah, and now there was no talks about Bret Hart coming back to be a face. There was no talks about Bret Hart. This was a Bret Hart heel turn, which to me, I think Bret Hart as a heel had much weight, had much credibility. And we'll get into it when we talk about when Brian Pillman joined the Hart Foundation. You know, that to me just took it to a totally different level when Pillman got involved with the Hart Foundation. And we know how the history between Brian Pillman and Stone Cold Steve Austin was. So it's like this feud from, you know, WrestleMania 13 really went on for a while between Bret Hart and Stone Cold Steve Austin, where other pieces were pulled into it, i.e., you know, Brian Pillman.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, so with the Hart Foundation, so with Bulldog and Owen, Bret being the peacemaker, bringing them back together, you know, them being the tag team champions going into this pay-per-view, and we mentioned the Legion of Doom. And my last, before we took the commercial break in my last statement, this is where the Legion of Doom gets their tag team championship. They defeat Owen Hart and the British Bulldog to become WWE tag team champions. So you had it was a bittersweet moment for the Hart Foundation at this pay-per-view.
Yep. It's interesting how they did that, because we get into that April pay-per-view, and it just seems like Undertaker wins the title at WrestleMania, and he's a good, solid champion, but he was pretty much storyline-wise like second or third in priority as the WWF champion, which is very weird.
It goes to our point that we talked about earlier. Everyone who thinks the WWE Championship has always been the forefront of storylines, it has not been. It has not always been the forefront of the storyline. And if you look here, the Austin and Bret Hart was the biggest thing that was going on. You essentially could have kept The Undertaker off of TV during this time, and nobody would have missed the WWF Championship.
They wouldn't have.
Because of what was going on in the company, what was going on with of Bret Hart. What was going on with Stone Cold Steve Austin? What was going on with the Intercontinental title? What was going on with tag teams like Mankind and Vader? What was going on with the Headbangers? What was going on with Rocky Maivia and his little feud that he had going on with Savio Vega? So you had a lot of different things that was going on at this time where Undertaker being the champion was okay. Not great, but it was okay. It wasn't a big star that we was at now. Yeah, he was safe. He was definitely safe as being the WWE champion at this point in time. You know, at this pay-per-view, he defeated Mankind. And then we look at it and look at his match. And so he defeated Mankind here. And if I'm not mistaken, and maybe you help me out because your memory is a little better than mine. That's why we call you the wizard. Right. It wasn't the last match on the card, was it?
No. Austin and Bret was the last match on that card. Austin and Bret, I believe that was a street fight, and that was the last match on the card.
And I believe it was for the number one contender.
Yeah, I think it was number one contender as well.
Right. So, with that being said, those who complain about titles being the final match, go back and do your history.
Mm-hmm.
The championship match wasn't always the final match.
Throughout most of 97, which we'll get into, WWE Championship was not defended in the main event a whole lot of times. The WWE Champion was wrestling midway or maybe three quarters away on Monday Night Raw most weeks.
Yeah. Wasn't closing the show out. Yeah.
You said what?
Nah, go ahead. You was finish your point.
Yeah, no. I was just saying we would have to get to that another day because I believe you saw the culture shift to where they were trying to remove the stigma of the championship being most important in the forefront of the fan. They started looking like they were valuing the entertainment more than the championship.
Yeah, and they had to keep up with what was going on in the other company.
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
They had to keep up with what was going on in the other company. But we're going to stop right there. Hey, so we took you from January to April of 1997. Come back next week, and we'll take you all the way through the SummerSlam. We'll take you from April to SummerSlam of 1997. Ladies and gentlemen, it's been a great ride. Hey, if you got any comments about us, any questions that you want to hear, and we talk about from a fan perspective, not trying to be like anybody else. This is what we were thinking in 1997, what we thought in 97 as we was watching this, as I was in Coppin State University getting tapes and watching Monday Night Raw whenever we could. Shout out to Dr. D, who would get tapes for us, Champ Creed, who was watching it as well at Coppin State University. So, hey, it was fun as a wrestling fan back then. Everybody didn't have cable. We had to do things to get our wrestling fixed. The internet was just now coming up, so we couldn't pull up YouTube. Was no such thing as YouTube. So you had to keep up with WWE by tape trading and watching videotapes. And some of you young people don't even know what a videotape or a VCR is.
Right.
But nonetheless, do what you normally do. Go ahead and just Google it. But if you enjoyed this show, please subscribe to us on all where you can find social media. Find a Wrestling Marks of Excellence. Subscribe to us on YouTube. Subscribe to us on Google Play. Subscribe to us on iTunes as well as Stitcher. Hit that button. Also leave a 5-star review. It really would help us out. Thanks for joining us, Wizard. As always, take us home.
Hey, if you're not confirmed, consider yourself denied.
End of stories, ladies and gentlemen. Good night. Catch you next week.